Mini episode 459 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by TV Howl, your home on the web for coverage of today's television scene and a look at the history of the medium as covered by big-time TV critic Adam Buckman. Follow them on the web at tvhowl.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, everyone, it's the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross talking that good old NFL football. Today we are talking the NFC. We're previewing 2014, our third pass through on this that we've done looking at the NFL. We're looking at the NFC, the best and the worst teams in the NFC, the elite teams and the teams that Kyle Ross has deemed will not make the playoffs in 2014. So we'll be taking all these together. For anybody that would like to go back and check out what we said previously, because this is, again, we're just putting the cherry on the sundae. We've already covered the NFC. We covered the NFC East in mini episode 399, the North in 403, the South in 406, and the West in 413. Additionally, we took a look at NFL win totals in mini episodes 441, 442, and 443. So we've covered a lot of this. It's just what we think since we last convened on this at the beginning
and
of training.
And you thought ESPN
camp.
Milked that cow for all it's worth. Hello. Hello.
Yes. Yes. We're doing it. Hey, we're giving the people what they want. Football is one of our most popular things to cover.
Yes. And by the way, this new setup you have here in the Foss studio has a real crossfire feel to it.
Yes.
Late 90s Bill Press v. Pat Buchanan situation here going on.
We are embracing debate today.
Yes.
No question
Although
about
Although if you that. Walk in, I'm sitting on the right, which doesn't make sense. If one were to walk in, that wouldn't
exactly.
make sense. Should we switch seats before
we
do this?
That would confuse people. That would be a little bit tough logistically here during the broadcast. So we'll just go with it.
I didn't want to get up anyway.
Yeah. Neither one of us really wants to do that. Yeah. We're settled in here. We're ready to talk NFC. We got the elite teams. And when you're talking about the elite teams in the NFC, we got four teams we're going to talk about. But we'll start with the two that are the best of the best. The two that essentially, in retrospect, played the real Super Bowl in the NFC Championship game, Seattle and San Francisco, the teams that, again, I think most people, myself included, would call 1 and 2 in the league coming into this season.
Yes, I have them 1 and 2 coming into my power rankings. Interesting that I think San Francisco, as I take a dramatic pause there, but I think San Francisco might have a slightly worse regular season than you think.
Okay.
Got some suspensions to deal with now, Alden Smith. That's one, I suppose, not some. But the injury to Bowman as well, that defense,
you're
some
lumping
holes.
These things together because it doesn't matter why they're out as long as they are out.
Yes, but that's some key personnel that's out. New stadium. Statistics show that teams playing the first year in their new home stadium tend to surprisingly struggle, especially early.
Okay.
So a team that's been to three consecutive conference championship games, including one Super Bowl, San Francisco's kind of in that position right now where all that matters is getting it done in the playoffs.
Yes.
I think to them, compared to some of these other teams we're going to talk about here in the next couple minutes, home field advantage doesn't matter as much. It matters only in the sense that they obviously don't want to go to the Seattles, the Green Bays, New Orleans, all those three teams all hold tremendous home field advantages, particularly Seattle and New Orleans. But with San Francisco, I just think that maybe they're going to win less games than you think.
Okay.
That said, I think they're very dangerous in the playoffs.
Okay.
You know, when we will obviously be talking NFL on a week-to-week basis, and when it comes to playoff time, this is a team that I would not want to face at all. But I'm going to say San Francisco, only 10 wins.
Okay.
Seattle, team that I gave you at this time last year to win the Super Bowl, they did. They're my favorite again this year. I'm going to say 12 wins for them. They get the top seed again. Again, here's the thing with Seattle. Will their defense be as good as last year? Probably not, since it was historically great.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that. We talked about that last year with Adrian Peterson. He was going to have a drop. You can't. It's very difficult to repeat a historically great season.
Well, and according to the great Bill Barnwell at Grantland, very possibly the best secondary of all time based on how they performed last year.
They might have been. People don't know this. Richard Sherman may be the second best player in that secondary behind Earl Thomas.
Sure. Yeah. I can believe that.
So
maybe third behind Cam Chancellor. The three of them are pretty tight.
Yes.
And 1, 2, 3.
Yes. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So Seattle I've got as my number one at 12-4. The thing is, they're just not going to lose very much at home.
No.
Maybe they lost one time last year. Mm-hmm. They didn't lose at all at home the year before. So maybe they lose one again and go 5-3 on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's 12-4. San Francisco, I have 10-6. And the other bye, obviously, you know, only one of those teams can get a bye. The other team I have getting the bye is Green Bay.
Yeah.
This is a team that should not have made the playoffs last year. I personally wrote about on my own, wrote about this in great detail, but Detroit certainly, and then Chicago, who had them at home in the final week of the regular season, both really fumbled it.
They did.
Green Bay, a team that missed Aaron Rodgers for 6 games last year, mm-hmm. slides into the playoffs, wins the division at 8-7-1.
Yeah.
That shouldn't have happened. It's really interesting. In the Football Outsiders Almanac, they talked about that Green Bay is kind of the classic, they have the feel of the non-playoff team from last year that jumps up and gets the bye the next
yes.
year, only they actually made the playoffs last year. So I've got them 12-4, second seed. And then New Orleans, 10-6. Again, they jumped from 7 to 11 wins. Remember, they were my big breakout team last year.
Mm-hmm.
They won't win quite as many this year, although they only do play 5 games outdoors.
That's got to be beneficial.
Yeah, that's huge, but still, I only say 10 wins. So
okay.
Seattle and Green Bay, I think, might win a few more than you think, which is why I have them as the top two seeds. New Orleans and San Francisco, certainly double-digit win teams, safely in the playoffs. Those are my top four.
We don't differ very much on these. I've got Seattle 12-4, San Francisco 11-5, New Orleans 11-5, Green Bay 11-5. Green Bay getting the second bye, according to my calculations. San Francisco, fun fact here, if they make the playoffs as a wild card, it'll be, you mentioned stadiums before, it'll be the second consecutive year of a team making an NFL wild card right before they host a WrestleMania. In this case, WrestleMania 31 at the new Levi Stadium next year. You didn't know where I was going with that.
No, actually, where I thought you were was the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
Being that this was an NFL telecast, an okay. NFL program, yeah, they will also be hosting the Super Bowl next year. By the way, pick against them next year, San Francisco.
Yeah, well, that's a great point as
in
well.
In 2 years.
They've got it,
spoiler alert, 2015, the San Francisco 49ers will not make the playoffs.
Yeah, the pressure's on them this year to get it in before that.
Especially because it's kind of an older roster, older than you think. You know, everyone sort of identifies this as a young team because of Kaepernick.
Right.
But for the most part, there's a lot of veterans on this team. This team is, you know, Seattle's a young team.
Yes.
San Francisco, not so much.
Seattle had turned over the entire roster since about, like, 2010. For San Francisco, it's been a slower churn, a little bit longer of a period of time, which is closer to the NFL norm, quite frankly, because what Seattle has done, that's another thing that's pretty historic, is getting that kind of a churn and getting that much of a quality replacement over a period of time, that kind of a transfusion generally takes longer. So, again, yeah, you and I don't differ on this very much as far as those four teams, and we had covered a lot of this previously. Again, I do want to put over Green Bay in terms of I feel like they really, again, upgraded the defense a lot in the offseason. They're not an elite defense, but all they needed was to not be below average anymore, and I feel like they accomplished that. And again, it's really going to be very, very fascinating to see how they're going to match up to the other elite teams in the NFC and to see how that journey goes. Because like you said, they are going to be playing a first-place schedule, which was unexpected based on how they went last year. We talk about it in a theoretical sense, especially in baseball, and you see it now in other sports too, of war, wins over replacement value. For Green Bay, we got to see in a very tangible manner last year what that means. Green Bay was a dog-crap team without Aaron Rodgers.
Remember how bad they got killed on Thanksgiving by Detroit?
Horrible. They were a horrid team. They were bottom probably 8 in the league, I would say, without him. Aaron Rodgers comes back. They need to win one game against Chicago to make the playoffs. They do it. Aaron Rodgers probably the league leader in war based on that.
While I don't have the war statistics in front of me,
mm-hmm.
I can tell you that no player matters more to the line than Aaron Rodgers.
Well, that makes sense.
It's him, Manning, and Brady right at the top, which is what you'd think.
Yes.
So, and we saw that. I mean, Green Bay went from a team who's, you know, almost always favored when Rodgers in the lineup. They won't be in week one against Seattle.
Right.
But typically they are to a team that was an underdog in just about every one of those games without him.
Exactly.
You know, he plays 16 games. Let's say he does. Just give him the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that the two previous years had won 15 and 11 games.
Right.
So, that, you know, 15's obviously a lot to call for. That was when they were coming off the Super Bowl hitting on all cylinders. You and I loved them that year. They ran into that one of those fluky Giants teams, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But you're obviously, to me, looking at a win total between 11 and 15 for this team. They're going to be very good. They also get their two toughest opponents. That's New Orleans. I was going to say gets their toughest opponents at home, Green Bay and San Francisco.
Yeah.
Going back to them. So that was just one more thing with New Orleans.
A great point about them as well. Yeah, that's going to matter an awful lot.
Yeah, and they've won, by the way, another thing with the Saints. They've won 17 in a row at the Superdome when Sean Payton is the head coach.
Ooh, okay.
Taking away that, you know, the year where the dictator Roger Goodell threw him out of the league.
A very consequential statistic. So those are the best four teams in the NFC. We're going to be doing this, like we said, bell curve style, taking the best and the worst in a single segment. So we've gotten those out of the way. We now go to teams that you, Kyle, do not think will make the playoffs. We'll go to the NFC East. We're singling out only one team in there, a team that I have at 8-8 as part of the mediocrity clog in the middle there. But you've got them as a definitive will-not-make-the-playoffs team, a team that you're generally higher on than I am, the Dallas Cowboys. But their holes this year are a little bit more pronounced because of the offseason that they had, and there seems to be a little bit more gripping than usual going on in Big D, particularly with the recent Jerry Jones defending himself media tour.
Are you talking about gripping? You know, yeah. Is that what we were referring to?
Yeah.
This Jerry Jones looks like he knows how to have a good time, huh?
He does. He does.
Great owner. Yeah. Lousy general manager, though. How about them Cowboys?
He sucks as an owner because he hired a bad GM, Jerry Jones.
I'll tell you what. The worth of that franchise is certainly something to be
the balance sheet. But, I mean, if we're talking, you know, doesn't being an owner have anything to do with hiring the right people to get the job done?
Maybe. It's kind of interesting. If you're hiring yourself, I don't really know how to differentiate the two. I think he's a good owner, but a lousy general manager.
Okay.
That's my narrative.
Good owner in a business sense.
Jerry.
I'll give you that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, in a business sense.
I can agree on that. I'll co-sign.
But here's the thing. Dallas has gone 8-8 3 years in a row.
Yes.
It has only happened three times previously since the NFL went to the 16-game schedule.
Mm-hmm.
No team had ever done it 4 years in a row. So where I can see 8-8 is a good projection for them, but to me, they're going to finish with a different record. So I'm faced with the choice, are they going to improve or are they going to decline? It's pretty simple. And when I look at this team, I just think decline is the more likely option. First of all, as I always do when talking about the Dallas Cowboys, I would like to point out that none of this is Tony Romo's fault. Tony Romo is the only quarterback in the league who could possibly be blamed for losing a 51-48 game, because Lord knows when your team loses 51-48, it's quarterback fault. They have a very good offensive line, Dallas.
He is good at padding his numbers in meaningless games.
I don't think he padded him. I saw him go toe-to-toe with Peyton Manning for 3.5 quarters is what I saw in that game. Has a very good receiver in Dez Bryant. DeMarco Murray's pretty good. The offensive line is actually probably top five in the league. But this defense looks really bad.
Now, without DeMarco, where?
Yeah, and they lost Sean Lee.
Yeah.
Like, this was one of the worst defenses in the league last year, and they lost their best players from that group.
Yeah.
And by their best players, I mean the only ones that were good. Like, they're going to give up a lot of points this year. And although I do want to defend, I do like to defend Romo, because I think he, while not a top five quarterback by any means, he's never been there. I think he's been fringe top 10 for a long time and has been certainly better than most teams' quarterbacks, kind of since taking over that starting job. You got to wonder if his narrative is kind of over at this point. Mm. The idea that Tony Romo is all of a sudden going to take the next step in this is like his eighth year as a starter.
Yeah.
That seems a little far-fetched.
Now he has a suspect back.
Yes.
You lard that on top of
it. Yeah, and Jason Garrett
is
a terrible head coach. I'm sorry. I mean, he might be a nice guy. I mean, Wade Phillips seemed like a nice guy before him, but...
Local boy, university school.
Yeah. Yes, yes. But, you know, again, to your point with Jones...
Yeah.
He doesn't have a good GM himself.
Yeah.
And he hasn't hired a good coach in a while.
Well, here's the thing.
Because he likes the lame ducks. I mean, he's got all these guys. Like, Monty Kiffin. He's got Rod Marinelli running around on the defense. Who's leading who? Bill Callahan. Garrett. Who's calling the plays? It's just a very bad situation.
Well, once in a blue moon, he gets when things get bad enough, he gets desperate enough to bring in, like, a Bill Parcells and let him do stuff. And then that gets old. He wants the credit again, et cetera. Let's talk to Jim Harbaugh. He's going to go there next year. If Jim Harbaugh can't coexist with Trent Baalke, how is he going to coexist with Jerry Jones?
I don't know, but I'd like to watch.
That would be interesting.
That would be unbelievable. Yeah. Can you imagine if Jerry Jones walked onto the sideline and started, like, telling people what to do on Jim Harbaugh's sideline? Jim Harbaugh might attempt to kill him.
We would see something with only one precedent in the history of the league. And I was reading a biography the one time that indicated...
Kevin Gilbride, Buddy Ryan?
No, I'll go further than that. Robert Irsay once fired a coach in the middle of the game. He was, of course, drunk. He was completely drunk off his ass.
Okay,
this was in the 70s.
Oh, was this like this is when Baltimore really kind of hit its deer right before they moved?
This was like mid-70s. They were still relevant.
Oh.
I don't... I'm, Did he fire Ted Marchibroda or did he promote Ted Marchibroda? I don't remember the specifics. Robert Irsay once fired a coach in the middle of the game.
Okay,
you'll see that because Harbaugh will tell him off, and Jerry Jones will give him the slitting throat gesture, and Harbaugh will be carried off the sidelines in the middle of the game.
A couple quick notes on Dallas.
Yeah,
of those three previous teams that had finished 8-8 three straight years.
Okay,
one. 99 Titans went to the Super Bowl, lost on the famous play to St. Louis, which stopped 1 yard short. The other two did not do very well. They fell to a combined 6-20-1. One of those, there was a strike shortened season in there.
Okay.
There was a team from 83 in there. I can't remember who it was. I don't have which team. I think it might have been Green Bay. You can check on that. I think it's the Football Outsiders Almanac, quite frankly, not to reference that for the second time in 5 minutes, but I will. And then the other thing, betting alert, listen to this. Mm-hmm. You're going to love this, Rick Morris.
Mm-hmm.
When favored under Jason Garrett, the Dallas Cowboys are 9-21-1 against the spread.
Wow.
That's horrible.
Okay.
As a dog, they're 16-7.
Interesting. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, this is a team that gets to the Mendoza line in the most unconventional of ways. Usually, you know, you see a team, they beat all the bad teams, lose to all the good teams.
Right.
Dallas just does it such a bass-ackwards way.
Right.
That, you know, but, there'll be a decline this year. With that, that defense is too bad.
And I was just talking about the 70s Colts a second ago here. Dallas, a big powerhouse of the 70s. The next team we're going to get to in the NFC North, another 70s powerhouse, the Minnesota Vikings. They were in the midst of a run where they would make the Super Bowl four times,
losing all
of them. Bud Grant manning the sidelines for those Super Bowls. I got them at 6-10 this year. To me, they were just about the easiest ones to put on this list. Unlike Dallas, where I kind of quibble a little bit about how bad they're going to be, I don't really quibble in the case of Minnesota. Now, again, 6-10 to me is not the mark of a horrible team. You're below
especially
average.
Especially because that'd be one more win than they had last year.
And, yeah, I'm the kind of guy that sees a decent difference between 5-11 and 6-10. Certainly more than 4-12 and 5-11. I think when you get to six wins, you're starting to you're within eyesight of respectability, and that's exactly what
if
I would call Minnesota.
One or two games go the other way, you're .500.
You're not in respectability, but you can see it from here, and that's how I see Minnesota. I think that Zimmer is going to do a nice job of firing these guys up, getting the most out of them. The quarterback situation, one way or another,
that's got to play its way out. That's the big thing here. Minnesota, to me, you really can't evaluate this team until Bridgewater's in there and we see him in real live regular season games.
Right.
You know, Matt Castle, very clearly a placeholder. The Christian Ponder era is obviously come and gone at this point. I mean, at this time last year, though, if you recall, Ricky, you and I were both predicting, you know, some doom for Minnesota.
Yeah.
Doom in the sense that we both saw through that mirage that was the 10-6 season 2 years ago.
Right.
This was a very clear candidate to regress last year. And regress they did. But the good news is for Minnesota, when you regress like that, there's kind of an uptick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the old plexiglass principle.
Right.
You know, when you have a big drop like that from year to year, they're probably going to go up a little bit. Now, this division is pretty hard.
Right.
I think the NFC North is the second best division in football behind the West. So, yeah, six wins is what the odds makers are calling for here. And it's what I'm saying, too.
Okay.
To me, Zimmer's going to make the defense better because that defense was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about waiting for Bridgewater, and this is a two-year plan. This is a team that, let's see how Bridgewater does this year. They could be better next year.
I think definitely that will be the case. They're going to continue to make progressions back towards our respectability. In the South, we got one team that makes your list. I got them at 7-9. You've got them at worse than that. The Carolina Panthers, we both pick them to regress. Sort of similar to what we were saying about Minnesota, the team that made that spike the year before to make the playoffs, that's going to fall back. You have the fall being more drastic than mine.
Yeah. Usually when it's funny that I think people look at Carolina winning 12 games last year. They look at what's still one of the preeminent front sevens
it's
in the
very
league.
Very good front seven.
And they say, okay, you can, yeah, we all know they're going to be worse, but hey, 12 a team, I mean, okay, seven seems, you know, that's a big drop off. I'm telling you that the drop off can be pretty bad. We saw it with Atlanta and Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a lot more severe than you think. Everything went right for Carolina last year.
Yeah.
And you look at it, they're weak on the offensive line with the retirement of Gross.
Mm-hmm.
The receivers are one of the two worst in the league, along with Cleveland. The secondary stinks. They were really lucky in close games finally. Now, that's after 2 years of being very unlucky in close games with Cam Newton and Ron Rivera. But they were lucky in close games last year. Newton's not healthy.
Right.
I mean, there's no positive way to spin the Panthers offseason. Somebody has to have a bad record in this conference.
Right.
Because I'm not picking anyone to go 4-12. So I'm picking the team to finish with the worst record in the NFC to be a team that had the second best last year, Carolina.
Well, and again, they were a team that with Steve Smith, and particularly, again, you have to define the receiving core these days as going beyond one and two. You have to go down to really about one to about four for every team. Even with Steve Smith, one of the worst receiving cores in the league. No Steve Smith this year. And again, I just think that it's unrealistic to think that passing game is not going to regress horribly.
I don't think Steve Smith would have actually helped that much. I don't totally disagree.
It would have been a little stability.
It would have been. I mean, it certainly doesn't make them better getting rid of him. Mm-hmm. But, we'll talk when we talk about Baltimore. I'll mention more. I thought he was an overrated pickup, quite frankly. 35 years old. I mean, what's a 35-year-old receiver?
Yeah.
But I just think it all goes wrong, and Ron Rivera might get fired at the end of this year.
He might. And the same thing happened to Leslie Frazier, is that you jack up expectations at a point in your tenure when it's inconvenient, and it happened. Now, here's the thing, too. I mean, I go back in time, and I mean, that happened in Cleveland. It happened to Romeo Crennel 2007, 2008. Now, it deserved to happen to Romeo because he wasn't a very good head coach, but swept out in that tide, unfairly cast out of Cleveland for the first of two different times, was Rod Chudzinski in the whole thing here. Good old Chud got swept out here. So
he wasn't very good anyway.
I'm partially trolling you on that, partially because I believe it. But no, that's it. Rob Chudzinski, also a Carolina connection here, previous offensive coordinator.
Yeah, we saw how much Carolina's offense fell off without him, huh?
Well, I got nothing for that one. But yeah, I think that again, that would probably be unfair if Ron Rivera gets cast out because of a bad season this year. It doesn't mean that
throw
out the baby
with
the
bathwater. The F ain't for fair in NFL, buddy.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. I guess I'm not just talking about fair. I'm also talking about smart, because what have we talked about with Cleveland? You keep hitting the reset button all the time. Do you want to hit the reset button in Carolina just because the team can't live up to what are unrealistic expectations
this
year?
Yes, but I don't think Ron Rivera's a great coach, though. I'll be honest with you. I think he got lucky last year.
He progressed last year. It seemed
like he did. You know, I thought the whole Riverboat Ron thing
was... He changed
was,
on the fly. How many coaches have the intelligence to do that?
I guess I'll give him credit, but I'll give him credit in the sense that he stopped being dumb.
Okay.
He basically did what he should have done. He wasn't risky.
Okay.
No, he earned this mantra that he was making these risky decisions. He wasn't. He was playing percentages.
Right.
When you have a huge quarterback like Cam Newton, go for it.
Right. That's true. That's absolutely true. That you should do that, and that he needs to do that a little bit more. So we put Carolina on our ugly pile here, and we go to the Western Division. We will have covered the entire NFC West in this segment. We did it with our really good teams, Seattle and San Francisco. We do that with the other two teams in the division, joining the old bottom end of the spectrum here. Arizona, who I have at 7-9 and not being a very bad team. St. Louis at 5-11, who I will admit, post-Sam Bradford, I think will have a bad record. I'm putting them down for the worst record in the NFC at this point. So I sort of conditionally agree with you on both of these. And if the standard is teams that we can rule out making the playoffs, yeah, because as much as what you said previously, I laughed until somebody actually said it to me, hey, Arizona might be the sleeper in the NFC this year. No, you do not go from missing the playoffs at 10-6 to making the playoffs the next year. Go ask the aforementioned 07 Cleveland Browns about the odds of pulling that off.
Yeah, especially when you only won 5 games the year before. Again, plexiglass principle. They were lucky to get to 10 wins with Carson Palmer as their quarterback. Larry Fitzgerald, by the way, kind of in decline.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Bruce Arians uses Andre Ellington a little bit more out of the backfield this year.
He's supposed to.
Now that Rashard Mendenhall, his former boy in Pittsburgh's gone, he has really no excuse not to. The offensive line's work in progress. I think the front seven is going to regress. Secondary's very good. I just look at Arizona as a team that, if you're viewing him as a stock, I think 10 wins was kind of their 52-week high in a way, I guess to make a lame comparison. I just don't think that people like, oh, man, they won 10 games last year. That makes them a sleeper. No, it just means that they were really, really unlucky.
Yeah.
That was kind of their year. We talked about how Green Bay was lucky to get in the playoffs. Arizona was just very unfortunate.
They missed their window.
That they play in a division that has two very good teams.
Yeah.
They're still going to have two very good teams.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to win as many games this year. They're one of my favorite future bets under 7.5.
Yeah.
Favorite future bets. St. Louis, I actually think St. Louis finishes above Arizona.
Wow.
And our big difference is you and I have talked off air, and we know this, and probably most people who have listened to all the past episodes on this. I just have very little affinity for Sam Bradford.
Okay.
So his injury did not really mean much in my projection for them. I still have them at 7-9.
Okay.
Above Arizona at 6-10.
And our good friend Joe Lindway, of course, proclaiming recently on Facebook that Jeff Fisher is the best head coach in the league. And a man who coaches the game the right way, in Joe's inestimable opinion. But
I think I blocked him. Not Jeff Fisher.
No, exactly. I don't think Bernie Kosar would agree with Joe Lindway on that either, by the way, after his classless comments.
I mean, the thing is, people are like, oh, well, three teams made the playoffs in one division last year, the AFC West. That's rare. It doesn't happen. It happens maybe once every other year.
Yeah.
It's tough to happen. So with St. Louis and Arizona are just screwed being in the same division as Seattle and San Francisco. And sometimes it's as simple as this. Quarterback.
Yeah.
You got Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
With two great defenses.
Mm-hmm.
The Rams and Cardinals have two very good defenses, but they got Sean Hill and Carson Palmer. There's your gap right there.
Yeah, exactly. That explains an awful lot of it. So going back to the best teams that we were talking about here, again, lining up Seattle as the best team in the NFL, which they are presently in both your power rankings and mine, my overall prediction for the season, Seattle over New England in the Super Bowl. How about yours?
I'm waiting to give that.
Okay.
Do I have to give that right here?
You don't have to right here. Okay.
I'm going
to
give that later.
Okay.
That one. I'm going to give it. Well, you got yours?
Okay.
We're going to tease the listeners. I'll give it one of the AFC ones.
Okay. All right. We will do that. Look forward to that then.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.